This is The Sweeper, the global football podcast with the best worldwide news and stories from the beautiful game, with Lee Wingate and Paul Watson.
On this episode of The Sweeper, we talk about the Champions League of non-league, the world's northernmost cup tie in Norway, a balmy run for Bowsers in Liechtenstein, and potential first-time champions across Europe. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Sweeper podcast with myself, Lee Wingate, and my co-host, Paul Watson. With Bayer Leverkusen having sensationally claimed a first ever Bundesliga title in Germany at the weekend, we'll be looking at some other potential first-time champions across Europe in part two. But in part one, we'll be looking at some unique cup ties in Norway, Liechtenstein, and first of all in Wales. Paul, you were at the Phoenix Trophy clash between Lantwit Major and Enfield Town last week. Perhaps you can remind the listeners and me about the competition and the format it takes.
Of course. So the Phoenix Trophy is like a sort of non-league Champions League, effectively. I think that's the easiest way to put it. So you have clubs from around Europe and they all play in various stages of the non-league system in their countries. And they all sort of share an ethos. They're all clubs that have something community-centered around them that makes them, I guess, different to other clubs. So, for example, in this tournament this year, we have FC United of Manchester, Lewis FC, Enfield Town. So you're looking at, you know, supporter-owned clubs. And I think that's what makes the tournament kind of more than just the sum of its parts. Like, there is a kind of thread that runs through it that all these clubs are effectively standing against the kind of modern narrative of commerce-driven football and doing something that's more community-centered.
And it was basically kick-started by our friends at Brera Calcio, wasn't it?
Yeah, funnily enough, the tournament actually started because Brera, this team in kind of the amateur leagues in Italy at the time, decided that they actually quite fancy playing European football. And it came from this idea of, well, wait a minute, we may be a non-league team, but what if we could play in Europe like you know, Champions League sides do? And it ended up with the formation of this tournament, which Brera currently don't have a playing side this season, so they're not competing in it this year, but they are still effectively administering it and running the competition and bringing these clubs from all over Europe, you know, whether it's Finland, Romania, Poland, England, Wales, all of them coming together in this tournament, which, yeah, looks like a sort of Champions League, has a group stage that feeds into something called the Final Four, which is effectively the semi-final stage, which will take place in Italy in the very lovely Desenzano del Garda, so right on Lake Garda in May.
What was the game like that you saw then? This was between Lantwit Major of Wales and Enfield Town in England. What was the quality like? What was the result? Tell us a little bit about the sort of game experience.
It's funny because, I've just come from Desenzano del Garda in my mind and the beautiful, warm, sunny. This was Wales in a very rainy, windy day in Wales. So Lantwit Major play at a ground called Windmill Lane. There is a windmill sort of on the side of the ground, there's a windmill, and by that logic, it is incredibly windy. It is incredibly windy all year round, but I even got the impression this was quite a wet and windy spell for Lantwit. So it was wild conditions for football. And I think Enfield Town had travelled quite a distance. You know, they had obviously come in from London that day and arrived on this pitch, on this blustery, windy conditions. And it really was tough to play football on that pitch. And what it meant is that the goal kicks, so the first half Lantwit were playing with the wind on their side, Enfield Town's goal kicks were almost going back into their own goal. We actually had a conversation on the sideline where I was talking to some fans saying, what is the rule if the goalkeeper takes a goal kick and it blows back and he has to catch it himself? And we believe that's an indirect free kick, but it was that bad that we were genuinely considering that could happen. What happened in the end was that about 20 minutes in, Lantwit were putting some pressure on, partly wind assisted and partly because they were playing very well. And Sean Kelly from Llantwit scored this incredible goal, absolute wonder strike from way out. And I'm sure he'll tell you the wind didn't have any part to play in it, but it was like an absolute humdinger of a strike. And I think the wind quite possibly did help a little bit with it.
So what was the final score in the end then?
The second half was very different. So the second half, as you may expect, the wind on Enfield side playing towards their ultras who had followed them with a very slightly mournful pyro, I have to say. Like one sort of small can appeared to be like pouring out blue smoke at certain intervals. But they were creating a great atmosphere behind the goal that they were attacking. And Enfield started to really play some very good football. And they came back, equalised, and it ended 1-1, which in the structure of the competition was actually a decisive result in that it puts Enfield into the final four and Llantwit Major will not progress. But as a sort of note of perspective, Llantwit have done remarkably well in this competition. They beat the holders Skjold at home in their other home game, and I think for them, Llantwit are currently in a relegation battle in the Cymru South. So they're actually fighting for their lives in Wales' second division. And I think in a lot of ways, this tournament has been a really welcome distraction for them. But nonetheless, they've sort of got to get their heads down and keep themselves up now.
We've talked about Llantwit Major on the podcast before because they have this series of amazing football kits, probably the best range by any club that I can think of. So first of all, at least this was last season, you had the Boca Juniors themed home shirt, which they launched on social media, tagged Boca Juniors in, and then had thousands of Argentinian football fans trying to buy. So that was the first kit. They also had, I believe, a dinosaur kit and a Mr. Blobby kit. And I think that since we've been making the podcast now, which is about a year and a quarter, one of my favorite ever podcast moments was you trying to explain to the overseas listeners who Mr. Blobby is. And I wondered if I might possibly ask you to do that very briefly once again.
Oh, well, Mr. Blobby, in the 1990s, there were some TV shows with a guy called Noel Edmonds. And let's not get into him too much, but you had this guy, TV presenter, and his sidekick was a guy called Mr. Blobby, who is a inflatable pink with yellow spots inflatable character who would wobble around and sort of, I guess, cause sort of chaos. He'd knock things over. He'd speak in a kind of weird, digitally scrambled voice. So he kind of go blub 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 blub. And that, when I retell it, sounds like we were all completely out of our minds in the 90s, but that's my memory of him anyway. I don't totally remember anything else about him. So when these shirts came up, one of my questions I had when I went to Llantwit was, does the goalkeeper mind wearing this? And actually, really interestingly, he loves it. As I guess you might expect, the goalkeeper for Llantwit is a bit of a club legend. He's like at that level, he's a brilliant goalkeeper. He's been at the club for several spells and you know, just a real hero. He's played a crazy number of games for them. It's called Jack Lansdowne. And apparently he absolutely loves wearing the kit. And away teams always try and give him stick. You know, they're trying to sort of take the piss out of him for this kit. But he just loves it and loves the attention. So, yeah, they've got some of the best kits in football history. On the day of the game against Enfield Town, he was wearing the dinosaur riding a tractor kit. Just looked absolutely amazing. Whereas the outfielders were wearing their Boca Juniors shirt, which is yeah, again, really lovely. As a side note, I will say that I was very, very lucky in that there's a tradition, apparently, in Llantwit, where when they win games, especially, they do something called the Six Halves Challenge. And what it is they line up six half pints. One of them is, I think, beer. One of them is wine. I think one of them might be spirits, even. It's like this appalling thing. And I was like very close to having to do this challenge. If they won the game, I think I was going to have to do it. And I'll be honest, I'm such a lightweight these days. It may well have just finished me off. I don't think I'd have made it out of Llantwit. But they didn't win the game, which maybe saved my life in the end.
Absolutely brilliant. We've actually got one of these Llantwit Major shirts that we're going to give away to someone in our Patreon community. As far as I understand it, we can get a shirt of the winner's choice, right? So it can be Boca Juniors, Mr. Blobby, or Dinosaur on a Tractor.
Yeah, there's a few. I think there's a kind of cool green and slightly orange away shirt, which we can get. What we'll do is whoever wins, we can give them the page with all the options. They can let us know and we will get them the shirt. Because obviously they have to let us know their size as well. I think they're all available through to 3XL. So there'll be something for you. And whether you choose to go Boca Juniors or whether you choose to go Mr. Blobby, that's completely your own business. I won't comment.
Yeah, so all you have to do for a chance to win one of those incredible, unique football shirts is to sign up to our Patreon by the time the next episode goes out on Wednesday, the 24th of April, and we'll then do a draw to pick out the very lucky winner. Let's move on to some other domestic cup competitions now. And first up, we're going to go over to Norway. You may have seen that the first round of the Norwegian Cup took place very recently, and there were some really, really great headlines that came out of it. But I think the biggest shock, or certainly the one that gained the most traction online, was 5th Division Torvaldstadt eliminating Eliteserien side Haugesund on penalties. Paul, did you see the sort of the highlights of this on social media?
I didn't. No, I missed this. So you say the highlights, as in the penalty shootout highlights, maybe? Because I've very rarely seen someone save 4 penalties in a shootout. That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was the main highlight of the game. It was this 20-year-old Torvaldstadt goalkeeper, Jürgen Haltheim Gröningen. He saved all 4 penalties in what ended up being a 2-0 shootout win. So it's obviously a huge upset, the biggest upset of the first round, something that he'll remember forever and the club's fans will remember forever. But there were a few sort of extra little details that sort of made this, I think, extra special. So the first one is that he is a substitute teacher in his day job. And all of his students, he became their hero for this. Basically, they were all sort of lauding him for, you know, they've seen their teacher, the guy who teaches them every day, make 4 saves and a penalty shootout. So I think that was a really nice sort of side story from this. But the best bit for me was that he's actually a Haugesund home season ticket holder. So he goes to all the home games of the team that his team knocked out, because these two clubs are in very close proximity in the southwest of Norway. So I do wonder how welcome he will be at the next game he goes to.
That's amazing. That is a unique situation. So they must play on different days, I guess, because the fifth tier teams play on a different day to the top tier, which is, I guess, quite normal in a lot of European leagues. Yeah, I wonder if he'll have some trouble from fans when he turns up next time.
Yeah, certainly a lovely story, though. And I think that I just really enjoyed the pure joy on his face after each save. So each save, he sort of ran out of his goal with his arms outstretched. And then on the fourth one, he ran towards his teammates, kind of did a slide towards them, and there was a total pile on. Yeah, just really, really nice stuff. And probably the best story of the first round. But there was another one, which I think for sort of sweeper and geography lovers is quite interesting. So this was
you mean you, Lee?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, I'll rephrase that. I found this super interesting. So the biggest win in the first round was an 11-0 victory. This was for 3rd Division Alta against a club called Kirkenes in the 5th Division. And what was interesting to me, as we've established, is that this game took place between the two northernmost teams in the competition. So right up in the Arctic Circle, at the very top of Norway, even further than Tromsø, the two northernmost teams played each other. So you have Alta, which is on the west coast of Norway, and then you have Kirkenes, which I've probably butchered the pronunciation of. That's located really close, actually, to the Russian border. So the Norwegian-Russian border at the top. And I think, and I can't sort of conclusively say this because it's absolutely impossible to verify, but I think this might be the northernmost tie to ever take place worldwide in a national cup competition.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty impressive. This is probably a very silly question, but how does it compare to Luleå? Is it Luleå in Sweden? We said it was very far north. Is that nowhere near?
Luleå, I think, is either in the Arctic Circle just or actually outside of it. I don't know off the top of my head, but Norway stretches sort of above Sweden, doesn't it? And then sort of bends round into Finland and Russia. So this is just about as far north as you can get in Scandinavia.
I get it. Yeah. So this is even further north. Yeah, because the other one that popped to mind was Rovaniemi, but these places make in Finland, but these places make that look south. They make that look like the balmy Mediterranean by comparison. Wow. Yeah, they are very north.
Now, we'll open this up to everyone. If you can think of a more northerly cup tie, then do let us know. But I couldn't think of one. We do have a couple of other stories on Nordic football before we move on to my favourite competition, the Liechtenstein Cup. In the Danish Cup, we have a cup final between Silkeborg, who have not won the competition since 2001, and Aarhus, whose last win was in 1996. So we're going to get an absolute rank outsider winning the competition there.
That's really nice to hear. And I think the Danish football at the moment is at a really interesting stage, isn't it? That the race for Superliga is you know, has been really tight, hasn't it? There's not a clear big leader in Danish football at the moment. Like Brøndby and Midtjylland and Copenhagen are all, and Nordsjælland, they're all really strong forces. But it feels like it's a league where anything can happen at the moment, Denmark. It's a very interesting league to watch.
Yeah, I think so too. Producing lots of stories, but it'll be nice to see a team that, you know, hasn't won a trophy for at least a quarter of a century winning the Danish Cup. So that'll be nice. And in the Faroe Islands, we talked last season about Koji Klaksvik's ultimately unsuccessful pursuit of a perfect season, so winning every single game. But they lost two games in the end, and they lost them both to Víkingur Gøta, who ended up coming second in the Faroese division last season. But they've sort of gone a little bit under the radar, I think, because of Koji's success in recent times. They're currently on an 18-game winning run, which I think might be a record in Europe at the moment.
Wow, that is pretty impressive. Yeah, I saw they haven't lost a game for a crazy amount of time, have they? They've won every league game since June last season. By comparison, KR Klaksvik have had a pretty shaky start. It's very early days, but they've already lost twice this season, haven't they? So yeah, it seems like we may have to become obsessed with another club, thereby jinxing them this year.
I think Koji Klaksvik obviously suffered by their coach Magnus Hosef leaving to go to Lyngby in Denmark, where he was sacked after just 50 days. So that's obviously not a career move that's gone well for him in the end. Let's finish off this segment by moving over to the Liechtenstein Cup, my favourite domestic cup competition. We mentioned it on the pod last time out in connection with FC Vaduz qualifying for Europe. And it is a fascinating competition for several reasons. And I think first and foremost among them is the fact that it has 16 participating teams when there are only 7 clubs in the country. So what you have here is you essentially have the 7 first teams, the 7 reserve teams, and then you have a couple of third teams that put themselves forward for entry and then play in some sort of pre-qualification tournament. So you have first teams, second teams and third teams. And this throws up some unusual scenarios. But we had a really, really unique one in the semi-finals recently. I'm sure you will have seen, I stuck this on Twitter, Paul, but the FC Bowsers against FC Vaduz run.
Yeah, the Bowsers must be absolutely sick of the sight of Vaduz. So they lost the final last year to Vaduz. They were then drawn against FC Vaduz 2 and beat them. Then they got FC Vaduz 3, the third team, beat them, only to meet FC Vaduz in the semi-finals and were thrashed 5-0. So what a run, really, to keep playing the Vaduzes. And this means FC Vaduz play in the final, as ever, against Triesenberg, who beat Treason in the other semi. So it is a confusing cup.
Or as I like to call it, the treasonous derby.
I like that. I like that. We can sell that. But what I didn't realise, though, I didn't realise quite how stacked this is. I mean, it's fairly obvious, but it's very stacked in favour of FC Vaduz in that they're in the Swiss second tier, whereas Treasonberg are actually in tier 7. So that's a final of a cup competition. And it would take an absolute miracle, I think, for Triesenberg to stop them winning this this world record 50th title.
Yeah, let's move on to that, because there are a couple of world records that Liechtenstein holds or will soon hold. So if FC Vaduz win against Triesenberg, which seems to be very much a formality, they will, as you say, win the competition for a 50th time, and they will be the first club in the world to win their primary domestic cup competition 50 times in total. That's quite insane. And I think it's sort of the result of the unique situation that you have in Liechtenstein. Another quite interesting fact is that Triesenberg are in only their second ever final, having previously reached the final in 2015, where they also lost to FC Vaduz, of course. But what's interesting about Triesenberg reaching the final in 2015 is that as they did so, Liechtenstein became the only European country where every club has reached the cup final.
Wow, that is a brilliant bit of trivia. Mm. That makes sense as well. That makes a lot of sense, but it's a very strange record, isn't it? Because I was looking at this, and the domination now is so crazy that it's, is it 28 years in a row that Vaduz have been in the cup final? Mm-hmm. And then before that, there were two seasons in a row where they weren't, which I thought was quite interesting. Balz has played against Shan, is it? Two seasons in a row. So yeah, absolutely incredible level of domination, really, for Vaduz.
Shan was the stadium that I had to break into on my hike of Liechtenstein. That was the one I couldn't get into. Well, I thought I had to break into it because I went in the back way and then I saw that there was just a front entrance that was open. So
yet another sentence again that makes you realize you're listening to The Sweeper. I had to break into the stadium of FC Shan.
Yeah, I was thinking we should start a Sweeper bingo. If listeners hear a phrase that one of us says that you will only ever hear on this podcast, then send us an email that just says Sweeper Bingo and send it to sweeperpod@gmail.com. We'll read some of them out at some point. One more fact that I want to throw in before we move away from Liechtenstein. We started off the segment by explaining how Bowsers have played Vaduz in four games in a row. Do you know the last other team than Vaduz that Bowsers played in the Liechtenstein Cup?
Ooh. No. I don't, but I'd guess Triesenberg. But you're saying it like there's a fact here.
There is, yeah. The last club other than Vaduz that Bowsers played in the Liechtenstein Cup was Bowsers Reserves in the in the semi-final last season. They played their own reserves and they won, of course. That's how they got through to the final. But it's not the first time that this has happened in Liechtenstein. USV Eschenmauren faced their own reserves in the 2010 semi-finals. So it's happened a couple of times, but it's quite rare, even by Liechtenstein standards.
There isn't anything, as I understand it, to stop it happening, is there? There is something to seed the first teams, isn't there, to prevent them all meeting in the first rounds, I believe. But there's nothing actually to... There's no draw mechanism that stops you playing. Theoretically, you could have FC Vaduz against your third and second team during a cup run, I think. Could you not? But I guess it's unlikely to happen because the third team often get ditched out pretty fast. But yeah, that would be a great cup run.
It is my favourite cup competition just because it has so many unique quirks. The final will be taking place, I think, next month. So when Vaduz absolutely trounced Triesenberg, I'm sure we will mention it on the pod. But for now, we'll take a quick break and come back in part two to talk about some first-time champions and title-winning streaks across the continent. Welcome back to part two of the Sweeper podcast. And if you haven't been hiding under a rock, you will know by now that Bayer Leverkusen have won the first Bundesliga title in their 120-year history. It's an amazing, amazing story, and I think also very healthy for German football. There'll be plenty of podcasts that will be telling you all about this, so we won't be going into it in detail. But we thought that this historic moment represented a good opportunity to look at other clubs across Europe gunning for their first ever title. And at the moment, there are seven football clubs in UEFA that are top of their domestic division and have never won a title before. Paul, this is that time in the podcast where I throw you a really difficult trivia question. Can you think of any of those clubs? And if not, I've got some clues ready for you.
I think I've got one, because we discussed it before. I think in Poland, Jagiellonia Białystok have not won a title, I believe, and they're top.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The clue I was going to give you is that you audaciously and successfully tried to pronounce their name on a recent pod. So I thought that you might get that one.
Narrows it down if you say I successfully pronounced it. Yeah, two clubs. I may have another one. Can I throw another one at you, which may or may not be right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, it's very early stages, But Riga FC, are they top? They're top in Latvia. I just don't think they've existed very long.
I'm not sure about that. And I'm not even sure if they have managed to win the league before, actually. But they are not included in my list because I didn't include the summer leagues because they've basically just started.
Yeah, they're only five games in. Yeah. I thought I was being clever.
Yeah, sorry. That's not one of them. One of them is the only European microstate that I won't have been to by the end of April.
Okay. That's got to be Luxembourg, isn't it?
No, I've been there. No, it's
Oh, no, you've been to Luxembourg. Sorry, my brain's stopping. Andorra.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've not been to Andorra. I keep thinking you've been to... You're so much someone who would have been to Andorra. I think I'm finding it hard that you haven't been there.
Yeah, sorry to let you down. I haven't been there. But at the moment, UE Santa Coloma are 4 points clear at the top in Andorra. And the thing that I like about UE Santa Coloma is that their team's nickname is the Squirrels. Because a large number of squirrels live around the town. And they have a long-standing tradition for fans to wear squirrel costumes at the final home game of the season.
That's a fantastic, fantastic thing on all levels. And it does make me wonder why we're not going to be at that final game of the season.
Yeah, well, maybe we will. Maybe we will. But yeah, I really like that. And I think it's also quite cool because their rivals, FC Santa Coloma, I think they might be Andorra's record champions. So for the other club in the town to win their first title, I'm sure that that will send shockwaves through Andorran football.
Yeah.
That's another phrase for sweeper bingo, that.
It is. I've actually just seen that they meet on the final day of the season. The final day of the season is a Santa Coloma derby.
Oh.
So what an occasion. All the home fans dressed up as squirrels celebrating this title would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, surely would. Another one in Armenia. Currently top are Noah. Noah are top in Armenia at the moment. Only founded in 2017, immediately promoted to the top flight. Then they dropped off for a few seasons, and now they're challenging for titles. So I guess if you were to plot their season-by-season finishes on a graph, what you would ultimately see is Noah's Ark.
Oh, jeez. I mean, in a way, I can only admire it. I think I would be a hypocrite if I didn't say that I admired that, but...
Sorry. There's always one shocker in each pod, isn't there? And that was it. Or at least I hope that was it. In Moldova, Sheriff currently aren't top, which is very welcome. Top at the moment, Petrocub Hinchest. They have, and I find this a bit bizarre, they have a strategic partnership with Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia. I don't really know what Al Hilal would get out of that. Or indeed what Petrocub get out of it, because I haven't seen Neymar turn up to play in Moldova yet.
It's also a strange thing, if you think about Hinchest, it's tiny. It's got 12,000 people in it. I think it's pretty confident it's not in the top 10 cities in Moldova. Mm. So it's a really odd situation that they are leading the way. And it's maybe going to be the end of this Sheriff run where they've won the last eight titles. They've been pretty much dominant in Moldovan football since 2000 to 2001. They've won every title except two in that entire spell. One of those was when Milsam Orhei, who also, Orhei, really tiny place, won this kind of miraculous title, which was assisted by the fact their president, Ilan Shaw, has almost infinite money. And he's most famous for committing one of the biggest frauds in history. He took $1 billion, or at least saw $1 billion disappear from Moldovan banks, which was 12% of the country's GDP. Interestingly, he's still in charge of Milsam Orhei. Doesn't seem to have affected him massively. He's still in charge. And in fact, I think he's running for Moldovan president elections pretty soon, I believe. So he's done all right.
I think we have actually already talked about the great Moldovan bank fraud on a previous sweeper. I think it was a bonus pod, so you'll be able to get that on the Patreon. The other clubs that are currently top and on course for a first ever title, Egnatia in Albania. I think this would be quite nice because they suffered the tragic loss of one of their players. I don't know if you remember, Rafael Dwamena collapsed on the pitch in November. I think that would be a nice way to honour his memory if they were able to get their first title this season. In Montenegro, FC Decic, they are currently top. Montenegro is a league, right? I think it's between San Marino and Andorra in the UEFA coefficient. It's in 54th place. And I have no idea why the Montenegrin league is so bad. And I have no way of finding it out. So if any of our listeners can tell us why Montenegro's league is so bad, please do send us a mail to sweeperpod@gmail.com. And the last one, Paul, your favourite country in San Marino.
What, that there could be a new title winner in San Marino? Well, it's been a really odd season, hasn't it? Like, last season we had to get used to sudden domination of Cosmos, who, like, the Cosmos have been absolutely nobody for such a long time, and then suddenly they were up the top. And this season, yeah, it appears like it could be Virtus who win the title, I think. They're definitely in control.
I wonder if it could be, actually, the first Sammarinese national champion to have so few players actually from San Marino. They've only got 5 San Marino players in the squad. The rest are Italian, but I don't know if that's normal.
I think there's often quite a strong Italian contingent in most squads, and some of the teams have, for example, Murata have a very strong Brazilian contingent. They're down in 5th. But yeah, I think what was interesting with Virtus was it not Virtus who were done for match fixing, but like sort of historic match fixing, and I think have only just sort of come back from that whole process quite recently. So it's quite interesting to see them sort of returning to being sort of one of the stronger clubs. They won the cup, I think, a few years back, but they obviously haven't ever won the league, so it'd be a big moment for them.
I think it's quite nice if any of those clubs manage to do it. The fact that we could have, you know, up to 8, I think FC Krasnodar are challenging in Russia as well, so we could have a few more first-time champions by the end of the season. But a big congratulations to Bayer Leverkusen, whose title win this season brought to an end the second longest title-winning streak in Europe, Bayern Munich's 11-year hold on the Bundesliga from 2013 to 2023. You might be wondering what the current ongoing longest title winning streaks are. So, Paul, what's in first place at the moment?
It's got to be our friends Ludogorets in Bulgaria, hasn't it?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, 12 years in a row they've won the title. That's the longest run in Europe and actually the 5th longest of all time, which is quite something. And I think what the most interesting thing is about the Ludogorets story is that they've never finished in a position other than first in the Bulgarian league, because they got promoted in 2011. And just won the title every year since.
That's an incredible stat, isn't it? I mean, it's similar-ish to Sheriff in that regard, in that the team came from almost nowhere, was bankrolled by a lot of money, and just suddenly became the dominant force. We always say, like, the incredible thing really is just also how tiny Razgrad is, where Ludogorets come from. You know, again, a city of about 30,000 people. Incredible to see them establish this stronghold while there are multiple clubs from Sofia in that league.
They're bankrolled by Kirill Domushiev, who is a pharmaceutical entrepreneur, and I think he chose the town of Razgrad because it's where one of his factories is. So I think that it ended up being quite a sort of random coincidence. But they are, as you say, based in this tiny town, 30,000 people. Second place in the list, now that Bayern Munich have lost their run, is Salzburg in Austria. We've talked a little bit, well, or a lot even, about the Red Bull story over the years, but they have won 10 Bundesliga titles in a row. And, you know, at the moment, this is I think the likeliest that they are to not retain their title this season. So I was in Linz on Friday evening and they lost 3-1 to LASK. They are a shadow of former Salzburg teams that had the likes of Erling Haaland and Patson Daka and Dominic Soboslai, Sadio Mane even further back. And I genuinely think that they might actually miss out on the title this season. They are currently level on points with a Sturm Graz side that have really been punching above their weight recently.
It'd be a fascinating thing if they didn't win the title. Very briefly, what's changed? I know that's a big question, but why is it that they're suddenly struggling to do something that seemed like a formality in previous years?
I mean, the signings that they had were incredible young players. And I think even though they've still got very, very, very good young players, I don't think they're quite at the same level. Gerhard Struber has come in as the coach. He's not doing such a good job. And I think then also it goes hand in hand with the fact that Sturm Graz are just simply doing really well. They won the cup last season. They knocked Salzburg out of the cup this season. So I think it's just that they've got a consistent rival, really.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That'd be very interesting if that streak comes to an end.
You've mentioned a couple of times Sheriff Tiraspol. They're currently in third place on this list. Founded by 2 former KGB officers and owned by the all-powerful Sheriff Holding Company, it is a romantic football story like no other. They've won the league every season since 2016. They're currently not top, as we mentioned in the last mini segment. They're behind Petrocub at the moment. But there was quite a unique story in the Moldovan Clasico recently, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. So two brothers scored in this game. I should spell out here for those who aren't familiar with the Moldovan Clasico. That is Sheriff from Tiraspol against Zimbru Chișinău from the capital, Chișinău. And the game was a pretty dramatic and high-scoring affair in favour of Sheriff. They won 4-1. But what was particularly interesting was two brothers scored, one for each team. So Hail Paulo Fernandez scored twice for Sheriff. His brother, Hail Paulino Fernandez, scored for Zimbru. And that doesn't happen very often, does it? Two brothers scoring on opposite teams.
Yeah, I think they might be twins. I'm not sure, but I think they might be.
I wonder if that's why... I see, I don't know these things, but I don't know if that's why one of them's called Paulino, obviously meaning the diminutive. But I wonder if you're more likely to call someone that if they are, I suppose it doesn't matter if they're twins or brothers, does it? But that'd be why he's called Paulino and the other one's called Paulo. Yeah.
I think this might have something to do with the unique format in Moldova. We've talked about this last year, but I'll just give a very brief recap. Basically, each of the eight clubs in the division plays each other home and away. And after 14 rounds, the whole league resets. So you either finish in the top six and play in the first division for the rest of the season, or the bottom two drop down and play a sort of group format with the second division. But essentially, everything's wiped clean. So from the end of the season onwards, this sort of final group stage, you will have 0 points, 0 goals, 0 wins, 0 draws, 0 losses to your name. All starts again. And I wonder if that is something that they've brought in to try and end Sheriff's dominance. But in any case, at the moment, Petrocub are leading the way.
Yeah, it definitely counted against Sheriff. Sheriff were 6 points clear after that first stage, and now obviously are trailing. An interesting side note, as you say, this thing where teams are effectively relegated mid-season and have a chance to play their way back up. Two teams went down to the second phase, Florești and Spartani. Florești are coming back up. Spartani are absolutely dying a death in the second tier. Interesting side note, Sheriff's second team are currently leading their group of the second division, but cannot be promoted because they're a reserve team.
That is interesting. I didn't know that. In any case, Sheriff on 8 titles, Salzburg on 10, Ludogorets on 12. I mentioned that Ludogorets have the 5th longest run of all time in Europe. Above them, Bate Borisov and Rosenborg, so in Belarus and Norway respectively, 13 titles each. And in top spot, jointly, the now defunct Skonta Riga of Latvia and Lincoln Red Imps of Gibraltar, 14 titles each. So the question is, Paul, do you think Ludogorets can hang on for 3 more years and break that record?
Well, actually, earlier in the season, I thought this year could be the year they come unstuck. They were only just ahead a few weeks ago. They were being pushed all the way by Chernomore, a club who I think may not have won a title, with CSKA Sofia sort of just behind. They've actually streaked ahead now, Ludogorets. So they'll win it this year. I can't see it changing easily. I think they could be the ones that just keep racking up titles from here on. I'd also say Sheriff are likely to win this year, but obviously they're not on such a long streak.
I think that just about will do for that segment. We have a couple of listener emails that we want to read out to finish the pod. We did our segment last week on clubs playing in the leagues of other countries. And I did say that if you can think of any more, then let us know. And we got some great emails. My personal favorite was from Jeff, and it was a very short email, but it said, "How could you not mention Cardiff and Swansea screaming at my podcast?" And I just had this vision that he's on a busy underground train. It's rush hour. It's in London. And he's just screaming at his podcast, "Cardiff! Cardiff!"
Sorry. That's a fair point. Yep, point taken.
I think maybe it was slightly too obvious for us. Maybe we tried to go for the more obscure ones. We also got an email from Charlie. Charlie says, "On your discussion of clubs playing in other countries' leagues, you could add Chester FC. The club plays in the English system and represents the English city, but the pitch and the stands of their stadium are actually in Wales. The border runs right through the car park, meaning some of the club's offices are in Wales, some are in England. This caused a fuss during lockdown when crowds were not permitted in stadiums in Wales, so the club had to play without supporters at home, despite crowds being permitted at English matches."
Wow, that is a mess. I did know that Chester Stadium sort of straddles the border, but I didn't know that about the COVID regulations. That's a good one.
I really enjoyed that from Charlie. Thanks to everyone else that sent emails in. We've read them all and replied to them all and really enjoyed them all. So thank you for sending them in. But I think that's just about it for this pod. That's been another mammoth one. You can join us for the bonus segment, which is out now. We talked about an insane fixture pileup in the UK, some crazy man of the match prizes around the world. And we also talked about an unlikely title challenger in Japan. And what was the last one? It was in Portugal, wasn't it? It was the on-field protest over unpaid wages. So all of that is available at our Patreon page at patreon.com/sweeperpod. Anything else you want to mention, Paul, before we bid the listeners a farewell?
No, I think that's about it. They can still buy those Icarus Timpu City shirts if you're interested in those. They're still available. I think you can enter the competition still till the end of the month. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Till the end of April.
Yeah, but no, that's about it really for me.
Okay, well, thanks very much everyone for tuning in, and we'll be back with another look around the football world on Wednesday the 24th of April. So we'll catch you then. Yeah, that was a good podcast. I enjoyed it. That was good.
Good. Good podcast. Good podcasting was done.